I wonder what happened to the real Abian.
Dead.
Are you sure?
He'd better be. That thing was wearing his skin.
Damn.
Lionstone lazily looked at the two inhuman bodies.
Now I'll have to order another Grendel.
Relax, people. The excitement's over. That was the only fury, wasn't it, computer?
That was the only fury. However, it is not the only deviation from the norm. The Vicar Roger Geffen, of Cardinal Kasser's retinue, is very definitely not human. Don't rightly know what he is, but according to the sensors, his structure and interior are completely inhuman. I can only assume he is some kind of alien, passing as human.
Take the creature alive! Damn it, this time I want some questions answered!
Geffen was an ordinary and average-looking fellow in a formal surplice.
Sorry, can't stay. Things to see, people to do, you know how it is.
His arms and legs elongated suddenly, his head leaping up on a wildly stretching neck. Different parts of his body stretched and changed shape, absorbing his clothes into himself, while different faces came and went on his ballooning head. People converged on him from all sides, and the alien fell back, collapsed, and splashed like liquid, spattering everywhere. Some of the courtiers tried to pick it up, but the pieces squirmed out of their fingers, rejoined suddenly into one central mass, and fountained up into the air. Razor and Frost tried to cut at it with their swords, but the alien flesh just broke and reformed without taking any injury. And while all this was going on, wide grinning mouths whooped and laughed, and sang a medley of popular show tunes. In several different voices. Finally, it pulled its many parts together, spun around like a whirlwind, flew up into the air, crashed through the hidden ceiling, and was gone. It suddenly seemed very quiet in the court. Valentine was the first to stir.
Well, somehow I never thought an alien invasion would be so silly.
And that was how the court ended that day. The courtiers filed out as quickly as they could without seeming disrespectful, while the Empress stood on her throne and screamed furiously at her people to find the alien, capture it, kill it, and dissect it. Not necessarily in that order. The Lord High Dram was one of the first to leave, maintaining a very low profile, and was glad to be well out of it. He had a strong suspicion the alien wasn't going to be found, and he didn't want to be around Lionstone when some poor sod tried to explain that to her. Given the creature's shape-changing abilities, it could be anywhere or anything by now. Or anyone. Dram decided very firmly that he wasn't going to think about that. The security sensors would probably track it down eventually, but it was going to be a long, slow process. There was also the problem of how they were going to contain the thing once they'd found it, but Dram decided he wasn't going to think about that either. He had his own problems. The courtiers had been pretty quiet as they hurried out of the frozen court. They all had a lot they wanted to talk about, but they preferred to do it in private. Dram had a lot he wanted to say to Lionstone, but for the moment he thought it would be better to do it from a safe distance, over a secured comm channel. So he made his way back to his private quarters in the Imperial Palace, taking his time in the hope Lionstone might have calmed down a little by the time he got there. As it was, he'd barely got through the door when his view screen started chiming insistently. Dram didn't rush to answer it. She was going to be in a foul mood anyway, so he might as well enjoy the last few moments of peace he had left. He sank down into a comfortable chair, put his feet up on the footstool that had scurried into position, sighed deeply, and accepted the call. Lionstone scowled at him from the wall. She was still wearing her crown, even though she was calling from her private quarters. This was a dangerous sign. It usually meant she had something official and very unpleasant in mind.
Dram, so glad you've got yourself comfortable. Don't sit up on my account, and no, we haven't found the damned thing yet, thank you so much for asking. This is all I need right now, more complications. Some days things wouldn't go right if you bribed them with a barony.
You should know. So tell me, how did I do? Was I convincing? Will people believe I'm the real Dram?
Of course they will. If only because they'll find the alternative too disturbing to contemplate. They'll believe you're the real you because they won't want to think a clone could get so close to me. They'll assume my security scanners must have validated you and leave it at that. As long as I say you're Dram, that's all that matters. The only people who saw the previous Dram die are contained in the Dauntless, and they're going on a mission that will keep them away from court for several years. By the time I allow them to return, it'll be old news, and no one will give a damn anymore. You will have proved yourself by then. I'll see to that. If need be, I can always set the mind techs on Silence and his crew and edit their memories as necessary. It'd be simpler to have them all die in an unfortunate accident, but Silence and his crew are popular heroes at the moment, and you never know when you might need a hero.
You don't need a hero. You've got me.
The Empress smiled coldly.
My people tell me you still haven't ordered the mass execution of the Tax and Tithe Headquarters security staff.
It seemed a trifle harsh. It wasn't their fault. No one could have anticipated a Haydenmanship.
The old Dram would have executed them all without a second thought. Some of them personally, pour discourager les autres. They didn't call him the Widowmaker for nothing, you know. I want those executions ordered today. People might think you were getting soft, and we can't have that. So pick out 100 of them at random for public execution and kill the more senior ones yourself. It'll make a good impression.
Of course, Your Majesty. Any other little errands you'd like me to run?
Don't get snappy, dear. It doesn't suit you. Now, how are you getting on with your new project?
Dram thought for a moment, wondering how best to say it. He'd been put in charge of mass-producing S-blockers, using dead Espers from the Silo 9 uprising as raw material. Even with current advances in technique, it still took one complete Esper brain to make one S-blocker, which was why they were so rare. And even with the mass slaughter in Silo 9, the tech people were already running short of materials, especially since they were also being used up in the other experiment Lionstone had authorized. Something called Legion. Something she wouldn't even talk to him about. Dram spoke before the pause could become incriminating.
Oh, yes. 101 uses for a dead Esper. Production of S-blockers is continuing. Following your instructions, my scientists are also experimenting to see if dead Esper brain tissue can be used in the construction of mind bombs big enough to destroy a city, thinking machines faster and more powerful than standard computers, as used on Mistworld, and devices that could change probability in our favor.
You've been experimenting for some time now. Do you have anything concrete to show me?
Not as such. The shortage of raw materials as we run out of bodies is slowing us down.
Then kill some more Espers. Don't disappoint me, Dram. I'd hate to have to scrap you and start over again with a new clone.
Yes, I'd hate that too.
I take it you've heard by now about Julian Skye being helped to escape?
Yes, rather unfortunate that.
Lionstone glared at him.
You always did have a gift for understatement, Dram. Still, Skye's loss is a setback. But we're really no worse off now than before we had him. At least now we can be sure Skye is as important as we thought he was. He slipped up once, he'll slip up again, and then we'll have him. And there'll be no second last-minute escape, even if I have to have both his legs cut off to slow him down. For the moment, I'm more interested in who helped him escape. Security cameras got a good look at him. It was quite definitely Finley Campbell, of all people. God's gift to fashion accessories. I couldn't believe it when they first showed me the tapes. The greatest fop and dandy of our time turning out to be a ruthless killer for the underground. Just goes to show you can't trust anyone anymore. Take a look at him in action.
Lionstone's face disappeared from the wall view screen, replaced by a series of scenes from the detention center. Finley Campbell cut and hacked his way through a small army of security guards, who might as well have been unarmed for all the good they did in stopping him. An investigator in a really bad mood might have equaled the body count, but it was still an extremely impressive performance. Sometimes the camera had to slow the image down to show all that was happening. Drem found he was sitting on the edge of his chair, fascinated by the speed and fury of Finley's swordsmanship. The scenes disappeared, replaced by Lionstone's scowling face, and Drem made himself lean back in his chair and look unconcerned.
Good techniques, but a bit rusty in some of his defensive moves. Of course, he didn't seem to need them much.
Huh! If the Underground can take a fashion-obsessed idiot like Finley Campbell and turn him into a first-class swordsman and killer, we'd better start taking them more seriously. You know he killed Lord St. John earlier, too? Though he's no great loss. Getting too politically ambitious, that one. He'll be more use to us as a martyr than he ever was alive. However, until I find someone I can trust to take over his position, you're going to have to take over more of his duties as Warrior Prime. It'll mean you're having to mix with people more, but you should be ready for that by now. Don't say anything you don't have to and practice looking mean, and you'll do fine. Now, I understand we're having problems with the rebuilding of Silo 9. You were supposed to have sorted that out. Talk to me, Dran.
With Worm Boy gone, we only have the worms themselves to control the Esper prisoners. The worms seem to have formed a crude gestalt that enables them to function as before, controlling the Esper's thoughts through pain conditioning. But the worms need to remain close together to maintain the gestalt, which means if we scatter the prisoners to other holding facilities, the precarious control will break down. And we don't have anywhere near enough Esplarkers yet to guard that many prisoners. So we're having to rebuild Silo 9 around the existing cells, with all the Espers crammed in together. The Underground is doing everything it can to sabotage the rebuilding, which means we need to maintain extra security measures to guard against them. All in all, we're lucky to have progressed as far as we have.
The worms. Are they sentient? Individually, I mean.
Unknown. Espers can't tell us anything about them, and tech scanners are limited to the physical realm. So far, the worms are following orders, and that's the best we can hope for. They're somewhat bigger than they used to be, and have apparently forged more connections with the host brain, but what that means is anybody's guess. I've established special security measures so that the worms and their hosts are under constant observation, just in case.
Keep it up. Can't have the worms becoming too powerful, can we? Very well. It seems you're on top of things for the moment. Get some rest. I'll contact you when I want you again.
Her face disappeared, the wall view screen went blank, and Ram was finally alone. He slumped in his chair and sighed heavily. It was hard enough to survive in Golgotha these days without having to pretend to be somebody else while you were doing it. Except that wasn't strictly accurate. He was Dram in every way that mattered. He just didn't have Dram's memories. He did have access to his recorded history, including a few things even Lionstone didn't know about.
Argus, talk to me.
At your command, sir.
The AI's voice seemed to come from every part of the room at once, something Dram still hadn't gotten used to.
Access my predecessor's diary. I have some more questions.
The original Dram had suspected that someday he might lose the Empress's confidence, or otherwise fall from favor, and given how much he knew about her private needs and plans, he had no doubt his fall would lead rapidly and inevitably to his execution. He also had no doubt she'd clone him. It was what he would have done. So that his work could go on, he confided all his plans and personal information to a special diary file hidden deep inside his personal computer, along with standing instructions for Argus to inform and instruct his clone replacement. He also intended for his death to be avenged. Lionstone was the most likely suspect, but he had many other enemies. The diary file therefore contained extensive notes on all his enemies' weaknesses, along with suggestions as to how they might most successfully be exploited. Unfortunately, his clone had no idea how and why the original Dram died. Only Silence and his crew knew the true facts, and Lionstone had kept them in strict quarantine. So far, she'd refused to answer any of his questions, but Dram had no doubt he'd get it out of her eventually. The Lionstone he'd had dealings with hadn't seemed anywhere as intelligent or subtle as the file had suggested. Unless he was missing something, of course. With no first-hand memories of his earlier life, Dram's performance in public was necessarily based on what the Empress chose to tell him, and he already knew she wasn't telling him everything. Argus's files helped, but he had to keep most of what he found there secret. Still, he felt he was doing a good job all in all. As the official consort, he'd stayed mainly in the Empress's shadow and rarely had to deal with anyone in person when she wasn't present. But even so, he had to be constantly on his toes. He couldn't afford to make any mistakes. Anti-clone feeling was stronger now than ever, and he was the court's worst nightmare. A clone replacing a person in power so closely that the court couldn't recognize it. After all, if it happened once, it could happen to anyone. And what better way for Lionstone to control her court than to replace them one by one with her own creatures? As it was, anyone who changed his mind suddenly on any matter, big or small, could expect to be thoroughly questioned by his peers. Just in case. He'd got through his first appearance at court all right, but now St. John was dead, his new duties as Warrior Prime would mean much more mixing with people, away from the safety of the Empress's side. Perhaps it would be better to appoint another substitute to take St. John's place. Dram didn't particularly want to be Warrior Prime. He didn't much like the man he used to be. The picture of Dram that had emerged from Lionstone's teachings and the diary files was of a man consumed by hatred and driven by ambition and bloodlust. Dram the clone considered himself to be rather more civilized than that. Whatever forces had driven the original Dram to such extremes had not survived the cloning process. He'd learned about his predecessor's other life as Hood from the files, and from them, Hood's connections with the underground. Luckily, Hood had only interacted with a few people who mattered. Valentine Wolf, Evangeline Schreck, David Deathstalker, and Kit Summerisle. They knew a side of Dram the Empress knew nothing about, but he didn't see that as posing much of a problem. The last two would be safely off-planet in a few days, and Evangeline had apparently disappeared into the underground completely. That just left the Wolf, and Dram had already decided to keep a safe distance from him. Dram had every intention of being his own person, and not a weak copy of a man he sometimes detested. But circumstances dictated that he had to play the role as convincingly as he could, for the time being at least. His personality had to be consistent to avoid fanning the flames of suspicion. And though he hated to admit it, the role did feel comfortable. He might find his work with the dead and living Espers distasteful, but he had no intention of avoiding it. Or the executions, now that Lionstone had insisted. If nothing else, he did seem to have inherited the original Dram's ruthlessness. To help sort out his confusion, he dug deeper and deeper into Argus's files. The first big surprise he'd stumbled across was that the original Dram had had to play a role too. It seemed he'd spent centuries in stasis, and took the name Dram only when the Empress woke him. Dram the clone liked to think she awoke him with a kiss, but had to admit it was very unlikely. A kick, maybe. No information survived as to who the man might have been before he went into stasis many centuries ago. Argus didn't know. Perhaps the Empress didn't know either. It wasn't something he could ask Lionstone about, because he wasn't supposed to know either. Certainly, it had been conspicuously absent from the briefings she'd given him. Dram was also dismayed to discover he had some of the old Dram's tastes and impulses. Lionstone had instructed him on how to kill someone at court, should the occasion arise, and when his cue came up, he followed the script she'd given him. Killing the MP had been an execution, not a duel, and he'd enjoyed every minute of it. So much so, he'd almost been unable to stop and turn away, even after the man was obviously dead. He'd tried to feel bad about that, but it felt false. He was still trying to decide whether he should take the Esper drug, as his predecessor had. He'd found a few doses of the drug carefully hidden in his quarters, stashed against the possibility that some future Dram might need them. The drug would give him the same limited Esper abilities the original Dram enjoyed, but there was also a small but definite chance the dose would kill him. And yet, if he didn't acquire those powers, all it would take was one mind probe by the Empress's Espers, and all his carefully acquired secrets would be revealed, including how he really felt about her. On the other hand, the Esper drug was addictive. Once he started taking it, he'd have to keep on taking it. And if someone were to gain control over the supplying of the drug, they would then have control over him. The original Dram had power over those who supplied him. He had something on them, some knowledge they couldn't afford to have made public. Unfortunately, for whatever reason, this knowledge had not been included in Argus's files. Of course, they didn't know that. Yet. So many decisions to make, including whether he should continue to support the Empress. She was where real power lay. But of late, she'd been alienating a lot of people over her insistence on ever more emergency powers. So far, no one had dared say no, but among all the families, the army, and the church, Dram was hard-pressed to name anyone Lionstone could still count on as a friend. They were beginning to be afraid of her for the wrong reasons. Push too hard, too far, and they might see her as more of a threat to them than the aliens were. If Lionstone was to fall, he'd be brought down with her. Unless he made some secret, cautionary alliance of his own, assuming he could find anyone to trust him, Dram the Widowmaker had many enemies, more rivals, and no friends. Not a good place to start from. If he was honest, his own sympathies lay with the underground. He was a clone, after all. But he didn't see how he could link up with them, after the original Dram had betrayed them so thoroughly in his hood persona. Perhaps he could adopt another persona, too. But to bring that off, he'd need the Esper powers that only the Esper drug could provide. He sighed again and stretched out in his chair. So many questions, so many decisions, so many possibilities, and all he really wanted was a little rest.
Sir, I am still awaiting your questions. Sir?
But Dram was asleep. Argus, the AI, considered the matter, checked that all the security measures were in place, lowered the lights, and shut itself down till it might be needed again. A Meeting of Minds. Owen Deathstalker, that most notable hero and reluctant rebel, stood at the edge of the Hayden Man city, deep within the bowels of the Wolfling world, and tapped his foot impatiently. He'd been waiting for Hazeldark for some time, and was prepared to wait a good deal longer if need be. He seemed to spend a lot of time waiting for Hazel to deign to put in an appearance these days. For someone who was always in a hurry, Hazel had surprisingly little idea of time or punctuality, especially where other people were concerned. She'd probably be late for her own funeral, if only so she could be sure of getting in the last word. She was supposed to be joining him to teleport up to the last standing, still in orbit around the Wolfling world, but for the moment, she was still somewhere deep in the Hayden Man city, doing something she didn't want him to know about. So all he could do was stand around like a spare posy at a wedding and wait for her. He knew she was there. He could feel her presence through the mental link they shared. But of late, that link had grown blurred and uncertain, as though something had come between them. And Owen was convinced it had something to do with their occasional trips into the Hayden Man city. Maybe this time, he'd find out what it was. He sighed and glared once again at the watch face embedded in his wrist. Up in the Great Hall of the Last Standing, that ancient stone castle that also happened to be an extremely powerful starship, representatives of rebels and freedom fighters from all across the Empire were gathering in a great council to determine the shape and future of the forthcoming rebellion. And he was stuck down here in the gloom waiting for Hazel. He could have gone up without her. In fact, Hazel had insisted he should, but he was damned if he would. She was up to something, and he wanted to know what. He might love her, but that didn't mean he trusted her any farther than he could spit into a hurricane. She'd been a pirate and a clone legger long before she took on the dubious respectability of a rebel. And besides, something was wrong with Hazel. She'd been distracted lately, up one minute and down the next, and absent-minded and vague when she wasn't snappy and bad-tempered. This wasn't actually untypical of Hazel, but it had grown much worse of late, enough for Owen to become concerned. Perhaps it was the strain of being a rebel and always on the run, or a side effect of the many changes the Madness Maze had worked in her. Either way, if he was going to help her, he had to know what the problem was. Which was why he was prepared to wait right there till hell froze over, if that was what it took to find out what she was up to in the Hayden Man City. It stretched away before him, a gleaming expanse of shimmering metal and glass, spread out across the floor of a giant cavern. There were towers and suspended walkways and squat, sharp-edged buildings, all shining brightly from within, pushing back the gloom of the cavern. The city had been built by the first Hayden Men many years ago, and in its inhuman cradle they grew many and powerful. They abandoned it to launch their war on humanity and never returned. Those few who did come back, beaten and dismayed, chose to sleep in the tomb of the Hayden Men, until such time as they might rise to glory once again. And while they slept, the city maintained itself, until it was recently shattered by the roaring energy cannon of Captain Silence's task force. Only wreckage and ruin remained, sadly gleaming shards of past majesty. Now the revived Hayden Men were busy restoring and rebuilding it, and the city slowly stirred itself and came alive again, gleaming and brilliant. One of the Hayden Men had taken Owen and Hazel on a brief tour of the city, and just the sight of the enigmatic, misshapen structures up close had been enough to make Owen's skin crawl. The buildings had not been designed with human comforts or logic in mind, and their purposes remained hidden and mysterious. The quiet was eerie and disturbing, unbroken by any sound of conversation or working machinery. No one building or structure was quite like any other, and everywhere there were strange shapes and unnerving angles, like the menacing cities we glimpse in nightmares, in the hours when the night is darkest. Just the tour of the city had given Hazel and Owen maddening headaches, and they'd made their excuses and left as soon as they politely could. Owen had never ventured in again, but Hazel had. Owen shuddered suddenly as he looked out over the city, convinced on some deep level that it knew he was there and was watching him with 1,000 unseen eyes. Hayden men were everywhere performing unguessable tasks, hurrying back and forth on unknown missions, like so many ants in a nest, but silent, always silent. Working together, communing on a level no human could reach, the Hayden men became a gestalt, a single mind greater than the sum of its thoughts, working toward an end incomprehensible to human thought.